All right, you guys really devoured the cheese and crackers here.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Like, again, you starved us for 3 days.
That's right. You know. So shout out to Katie for bringing that down. All right, we're here in my basement. Patrick Foster is not with us this week. He is in Wisconsin, and if you look at his Twitter feed, you'll see that he's hit up about every record store in the state of Wisconsin, I think. He also told me, he called the other day and said, he used some language I can't use on this podcast, but he, in describing how cold it was there already. This is early November, and apparently they already had like 4 inches of snow one day, and it was like super cold in Wisconsin, and his Virginia blood couldn't handle it. In fact, he told me even, he said, he almost didn't even take a winter coat because he was thinking, it's November. How cold can it be? You know, living where we are, it's not that.
Does it not watch Packer
not that
games?
Bad. Yeah, exactly. And then he said, I'm glad I brought a coat because it's cold as, you know, you can imagine. So anyway.
Yeah. Are we going to get another check-in from the road podcast?
I hope. Well, he didn't take the, I mean, you can see the equipment is right here in front of me. Oh. So unless he records it on his phone or something, I don't know.
Hearing that he travels a lot, and I think you do too, I need to up my Patreon so that when you go shopping in those stores, you're looking for music for me, because I need all the vinyl from the Peter Gabriel area. Put a bounty out there.
There you go.
You can find it, buy it for Kevin.
So we do have a level on the Patreon where we go record shopping for people. Yeah, yes.
Exactly. And, that's what I mean.
That's starting to take off, yeah. Okay, so anyway, Patrick's not here. Instead, you just heard Kevin Goff.
I'm here.
Taking a drink of beer right there, and Rob Gates.
Yes, I am here too.
So, and speaking of the beer, tell us what beer we have today, Kevin. You brought this.
Oh boy, I've already forgotten the name, but from Jailbreak Brewing Company, this is called Feed the Monkey, and it's a Hefeweizen.
And cousin of Shock the Monkey, perhaps?
Oh, that's why I brought it.
Yes. There you go. There we go.
Makes sense.
I definitely, when I was looking for beer, I was like, what has like kind of a Genesis theme to it? So there
you go. By the way, my name is Jim Linehan. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. All week we have been talking about Genesis. When I mentioned that Patrick Foster is out of the state, that's why we're talking about Genesis this particular week, because he can't veto it. So this episode, we'd already talked about like sort of the Genesis history and arc. Mm-hmm. This one we're going to have a little bit of a looser discussion, and I wanted first to ask you, Kevin, have you seen Genesis live?
I have. 1986.
1986. So
in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, and any thoughts on that show?
It was awesome, of course, but I was 16, I think. Just shy of my 17th birthday, I saw them. And I was in the seventh row, and I snuck in a little Kodak camera. You remember those?
I thought you were going somewhere else with that sentence.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
All right. Anyway,
Kodak
17,
camera.
But yeah. I snuck in one of those disc camera. Do you remember those little Kodak disc
cameras? Oh, yes, disc cameras.
I had one of those, and you know, you shove it down your pants. It was tiny.
It was thin
and tiny, and
I forgot about
that. I was able to get that in.
And terrible resolution.
So somewhere in my basement, and I should have probably tried to find it for this, but I have pictures that I took of Phil Collins up there, and I was a stupid 16-year-old back there from the seventh row just doing this, trying to get Phil's attention, and he actually did. I want to say this, and maybe he didn't actually, but I feel like he did. He actually did wave back to me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
At some point. So that was pretty exciting. But the show, it blew me away. Like I said, I wasn't too familiar with the old stuff, but it didn't matter at that point. You know, I was familiar with the stuff I knew, and they played so much of that, you know, when I was hearing In the Cage from Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, I just thought it was awesome. I was like, listen to those drums. Phil's in there doing his fills, and yeah, so, but it was great. But, you know, as you watch their live shows, they don't move around a lot. They're kind of stationary. They kind of get in there. I think Phil tries to have his moves, but he does the same moves with every tour. He gets the tambourine out, drives it like he's driving a car, that kind of thing, trying to be funny. And, you know, I don't think they deviate from what they talk about before the song. They tell the ghost stories before Home by the Sea and things like that. But it didn't matter. None of that matters. It's all about the music, and it was really good stuff.
It's funny what you're saying is because I'm thinking they started and came up in an era before MTV. And before, let's be honest, you know, looks were a priority in terms of bands, and yet they still pulled it off. Like even in the video era, because I guess they did interesting videos, and you know they had were writing hit songs by that point. It worked. Like they were a an MTV sort of band.
Did you notice in the Invisible Touch video where they all had their sport coats on and they had their sleeves rolled up to their elbows, like in the 80s, like everybody used to, like the Miami Vice look.
But they were sort of older guys by that point compared to, you know, other hit makers. You know, they certainly were not like, you know, they were competing against like Duran Duran, that kind of thing, and doing well, you know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, they would have been right up against Duran Duran, I guess, in 86, that kind of thing. Yeah, sure.
So the show you went to, you mentioned it was in Atlanta. What was the venue?
Omni. No longer there.
The Omni. That's the arena, the basketball.
Yep.
The Hawks arena, right? And so it was a big show. And did they play for a long time?
It was like 3 hours long.
Right.
And, you know, they would do a lot of songs, but you know, they would also lead into these medleys of songs that... would include snippets from their whole career, right?
Okay.
But at some point, I noticed they were starting to put in other songs too, and I never quite understood why they would need to do that. You know, in the middle of Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, he starts singing snippets of That's Entertainment and things like that. And so it got kind of that Phil Collins polish on it. But, you know, it was good, but entertaining.
Which That's Entertainment?
Not the jam.
Okay.
The Broadway version.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Sounds kitschy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, why would you need to cover other band songs when you have your own catalog of your own? But, you know, he was there to entertain people.
Right.
I think that was the key. So,
did they do long songs? Like, you know, because one of the things Genesis was known for in their prog days was doing long songs.
Like, they would stick to the hits, but then they also interspersed in between those hits. They would have 11-minute songs. Like when I saw them, they did In the Cage, which is definitely it's an 11-minute song on, but it would also within itself would incorporate Afterglow and other types of songs throughout their career. And they just like to do that. Like, it would give an opportunity for Phil to go run behind the drum set for a little while. And
was this the show?
That was
possibly.
I went the next day, February 26th. There's actually a story there. Is that we were in line camping out, which nobody does anymore for tickets, right? We were camping out, and
good old days.
Got up. We were way, way, way in the back of the line at Turtles Records in Atlanta. And then got up there, and we thought it was sold out. And they were like, show's over. Next show announced. So that's how we ended up in the seventh row.
Nice.
Never happened in my lifetime. I bet we all have experiences like that where we're camping for tickets. But not anymore. Our kids wouldn't know what that's like.
All right, so I looked it up on setlist.fm, and I found your show. So this one, February 26, 1987.
Yep,
definitely. Omni. So I'm looking at the set list here, and... To my point about the long songs, there must have been something in here because it looks like, including the encore, there were 17. And you're saying it's like 3 hours?
It was very long. Yep. They didn't stop. They didn't have an opener. They just came out, started playing. Phil would walk out and just do Mama. And then they'd go right into Abacab.
So explain one thing to me here. I notice on the set list that the 12th song in was Home by the Sea, which you mentioned is one of your favorites.
Yep.
Then the next song is called Second Home by the Sea. So what is that?
So on that album, I don't know why they broke it up. I guess they were just different enough. On the actual Genesis album, they were two distinct tracks. And if you listen to it, I don't know if Spotify can do it, but, you know, and Apple and those kinds of things, it does blend them together where you don't know there's a break there. Yeah.
So it would have been like an 11-minute song.
Yeah.
But on the track listing, it's like 5 and 6.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. And maybe there was something to that. Maybe they felt like Home by the Sea could have been a hit of some kind,
right,
but not at 11 minutes. So let's break it up a little bit. I don't know.
Well, kind of like no one's going to play it on the radio at 11 minutes.
Yeah. Right. But
that's like in journalism where you make something into a sidebar so you can break it up into two stories instead of one, right?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But I seem to recall the second part of that had a unique coda.
It's different. It's definitely different. Like the rhythm changes and that kind of thing. But at the end of the song, Phil Collins kind of brings it back where he says, like, and we relive our lives and what we That's tell right. you yep. at the end.
Yep.
And so it brings the whole song together, but, you know, I don't know exactly why they decided to do that.
So where do you guys stand on long songs? I'm talking like, what would you say is long? At least 8 minutes?
Sure. I would probably say anything over 5 or 6. My okay. my wife does not like listening to music with me because I'm trying to get through as many songs as possible. And, you know, I'll listen to like 3 or 4 minutes and then I'm hitting it. I'm moving on. The first songs that I know, right? Like,
sure,
I just want to
catch, appreciate that.
Like, I'm more about getting the volume of music, not the... So I have to remind myself sometimes when I'm with other people.
Well, Rob, I know where you're going to come down on the issue of long songs, right? Because you're a deadhead.
Right.
So you like extended.
Yeah, if it's a good song, yeah. But if it's so the thing about long songs is this, if it's a good song, you get it's an extension of the good song. It's great. If it's a bad song,
sure.
It's an extension of suckage. So, you know, who wants to sit through that?
Right.
Of course, if you're listening to an album or whatever, you know, you can skip it if it's a long song you don't like. If you're at a show, well, you sort of go to the bathroom or get a beer. I think we've all been there.
Right.
But I don't mind long songs as a rule. You know, we think about the history of long songs in pop music. Light My Fire comes to mind,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
which is a great song.
And
when
they, that one?
And when they chopped it, you know, it was not nearly as good. And I think any song that they've chopped for radio play is not as good as the original because the song has a natural flow to it.
Right. Agreed. But to be a prog rock band, you got to have some long songs sure. in your catalog, right?
Yeah. Rush. Otherwise. Temples of Syrinx from, 2112, yeah.
Well, yeah, so Jethro Tull, of course, had Thick as a Brick, which I think was the entire side of one album. King Crimson had Starless and Bible Black, which I believe is 24 minutes. You can't get much more prog rock than that.
Right.
And I do think all the prog rock bands definitely had sort of extended. The Moody Blues songs tended to go on, but... all of them, from my perspective, were always enjoyable to listen to. And it's sort of like a work. I mean, if you think about a symphony or,
sure.
or right? I mean, that's a hugely long song.
That's right.
I do like bands, though, that will break it up for you on the album, though. Like Rush, it would give you like sections of
like
it,
movements?
Right?
Movements?
Movements.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe that was the point of it, right? In that you can... put your arms around. Oh, I like that section. Like,
right.
You know, that's different.
Side 2 of Abbey Road.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's yes, because it's all sort of strung together,
right?
Okay, to be a work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example, though. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, their Genesis, in I think it was not their last live album, the one before it, right after they did the last Phil Collins album, they released the Way We Walk. And then they had a shorts version, and then they had a longs version of that live album. So I guess it was to cater to each of the fans. Funny story is that one of my cousins like was looking for a Genesis song. She didn't know the name of it. So she went out and bought these live albums. Didn't know which one to get because she didn't know the name of the song. So she went ahead and bought both of them. Turns out it was on the shorts album. I think it was like No Son of Mine or Jesus Knows Me or
yeah.
something. Whatever those hit songs were in the 90s. Anyway, I got the benefit of like she did not like, she was like, these are all like really long songs. I was like, it says it on the album title. So she gave that to me. So
as I look at this, and so as you brought that up, I'm looking at those track mm-hmm. lists right now. And a couple of the songs from the longs.
Yeah.
were songs that were played at that show you were at. So, for instance, Domino, yep. that's one of the longs.
That's right? actually a really good song. That was on the Invisible Touch album, believe it or not. So it feels a lot like they were trying to do another Home by the Sea, second Home by the Sea.
Got it.
So it has like two parts third in it that's long. So third Home by the Sea. Yeah, yeah. But that's actually a really good one.
But long songs are long for a reason. I mean, they don't just do a long song for the sake of doing a long song.
Right.
So it's either a composition or it's a lyrical work.
Right, but could they get six songs out of one song? I mean, is that You know, why do they decide to make that? Especially like in the case of Second Home by the Sea, is it just because they felt like it was it composed together, or was it something about the lyrics they wanted to tie it together? Or
I think in the prog rock sense, when you're doing a longer song, you're really trying to create an immersive experience, right? You're trying to get the listener really invested in this, invested, I think, in this like journey. And with that comes changes within the song. It, like to Rob's point, it's not just an extended,
right,
you know, version of the song. It's not just adding more verses and repeating the chorus a few more times. It's like taking you on some different paths within the song, right?
There's a journey through it. Yeah,
that's right. Sure. And I think, you know, for artists who are writing that kind of stuff, they're trying to push the boundaries of what is pop music, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But I mean, if you listen to like I'll take a here's a long song that doesn't do what I was just saying, which is Rapper's Delight. Listen to that song, and it's the same song just for like 10 minutes or whatever it is, right?
They just didn't know how to end it, basically. Right. Yeah.
But it was supposed to be a dance tune, so that was the idea there, keep people on the dance floor. But, you know, that's you can listen about 3 minutes of that, and you're like, okay.
I get it.
I got it. I'm out, yeah.
To your home by, I mean, there could have been a contractual thing. You know, the record contract may have said you need to have X number of songs on the album.
That would be sad, but yes, you may be right.
I mean, in the case of Genesis, I would think they would be able to come up with another song, but maybe they couldn't fit another song on the album, and they wanted to get Home by the Sea on the album, and the only way to do that and maintain and be within the construct of the contract was to split it in half.
Hmm. Maybe. So let me ask you this, though, because one album that we didn't talk about at all, really, this week, kind of left off at Invisible Touch.
Mm-hmm.
But they did one more album. Two more with Phil Collins? Well, one more with Phil Collins,
one more,
right?
One with Phil Collins.
Called We Can't Dance, 1991.
Right.
And even then, I'm looking at that
driving
track listing.
Driving the Last Spike.
Driving the Last Spike was a 10-minute song, and Fading Lights was a 10-minute song. Yeah. So I get, my question here is, as a Genesis fan, was there almost an expectation that even in their later years, they were going to have something that was going to you know, harken back to the prog rock days and be a longer
Invisible,
piece of work?
Invisible Touch had Brazilian on there. They had Domino, which we already talked about, Tonight, and it's not in the radio form, but the actual full version of that song is 8 minutes long.
Yeah, it's almost 9 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every album still had those songs, and I believe that's intentional by Genesis.
Probably.
For those fans. Like, these are the songs you want to listen to. The other ones are for the radio friendly. You can skip on it.
All right. Is there a good long song maybe we could play some of to play out on this one?
We've already played a few of the long ones. We went through Supper's Ready. We went through did we play Home by the Sea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was yesterday.
Yesterday. Yeah. Short-term memory, you know. So
It's the beer,
sure. Drinking for 5 days is going to do that too.
With only cheese and crackers.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But why don't we go with the one you mentioned, Driving the Last Spike? I know that one appears on live albums, and Genesis fans say that of that album, the We Can't Dance, that one is a good tune. So,
would you rather hear the studio version or the live version?
It does not matter.
All right, let's go with the studio one because I want to hear that from 1991. All right, we'll do that. And then tomorrow we're going to wrap up Genesis Week with just kind of a odds and ends. We're going to talk about
personalities of Genesis.
There you go. Okay. And of course, you're going to listen tomorrow because you're listening how frequently?
Every day.
There you go. All right. If you want to contact us, talk about Genesis, tell us your thoughts and feelings, you can call 612-440-1984. Very good. Thank you, Kevin. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at suburbspod. All right, let's get out of here. We are going to hear not the full 10 minutes, maybe just a couple of minutes of Driving the Last Spike from 1991 Genesis. This is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Rob Gates.
Kevin Goff.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Yeah.
Is there ever a band called Exodus?
Exodus. No, you're thinking of, yes, it is. it was the two guys, and they did a video, black and white.
According to the Wikipedia, Exodus is an American thrash metal band formed in 1979 in Richmond, California. Is that who you're thinking of?
Who am I thinking of?
I was just thinking of the book that comes after Genesis in the Bible.